So, good morning, everybody, or good afternoon, depending on where you are in the world. And this webinar is on writing policies and procedures, the most common issues, and how to fix them. My name is Ellis Pratt. And what we're going to cover in about 35 to 40 minutes are these topics. I'm going to look at just a little bit about who I am, why we've picked this as a webinar subject, some common writing problems that there are with writing policies and procedures, how we can solve those, some summaries and questions. Now, on the web page for this webinar, you'll see there is a question box, and we'll be taking questions at the end. But if you do have a question or a comment, then do use that question box to ask the questions that you will have, and then at the end we will look to address those. We are recording this webinar, so there may well be a recording at the beginning, after this presentation at the end. So we should really start by defining what is meant by a policy, a process, and a procedure. And the way that we generally define it to our clients is that a policy really is the position or the statement that the organization has about a particular item. It's the goals and direction in which it wants to take towards their quality or safety, that sort of thing. And a process provides more detail and is really explaining what to do. And a procedure or a task, it's the next level down, it's the more detail, and that's really how to do things. So just a little bit about myself, in case you don't know who I am. And I'm a director of a company called Cherryleaf, and co-owner of the company. We're a technical writing services company based in the UK, and one of the things that we do is we write policies and procedures for clients, and we help improve and update existing policies and procedures. So this webinar is based on real experience and tales from what we've just experienced from doing projects like this for our clients. So you might think that policies and procedures is a pretty dull subject, and why did we pick this as a subject that we might present on? Well, this is the first time that we're using this webinar platform. We do webinars in conjunction with vendors such as Madcap Software and Adobe, but we thought we would take the opportunity to host some webinars ourselves and try this new platform. For us, it's a new platform. So we thought we'd pick a subject that isn't necessarily the hottest of subjects. What we have been surprised about is quite how many people have registered to attend this event. And it's obviously something that's important to a lot of people. We've probably got twice as many people registered for this event than we actually anticipated. So we thought we'd start with a sort of a soft launch. But of course, policies and procedures are important, because if they're done wrong, if you have the wrong policy, or if your policy isn't followed through, it can have quite large implications and consequences for that. For example, with fire safety procedures, if they're not carried out correctly, or if you have poor fire safety policies and procedures, it can be quite literally fatal. And that photograph there is a tower block called Lackener House in South London, which a few years ago, unfortunately, caught fire and led to a number of people dying. And we've seen in the news throughout this year fines that have been imposed on NHS trusts because of IT data breaches, where patient records have not been kept confidential. And the whole issue of NHS IT security is a huge issue for the NHS at the moment. And we've had clients in the past, such as a chocolate manufacturer that had 17 factories and 17 ways of doing everything, from ordering stuff to dispatching it. And there was a merger of one company with another, and they wanted to move to an SAP system. And SAP has one way, effectively, of doing something. So what they had to do was really discover how every different factory did things, and then to look and compare all these different ways and streamline so they had one optimal way that they could apply that would work across all those different factories. And mergers is often, and acquisitions is often a key prompt or impetus for looking at policies and procedures or needing them. There was a government department which privatized part of its organization, and the remaining parts were put together as one new entity, and a new management board directors formed for that. For a lot of the management directors, they were now having to manage and control departments that they'd never seen or dealt with before. And without the policies and procedures, they really didn't know what their organization did. So there was an exercise of taking these six organizations, taking all the different policies and procedures, and putting them into one single unified system so they had a view of the whole organization and what it was doing. And from there, they could start to check and improve the organization just to manage it, really. And another situation was often you find a need for policies and procedures within a finance department. And one example we've had in the past is with one client where they were selling large six-figure items which required financial loans to finance the purchase of these items. And the approval process for getting these loans approved was actually in the hands of the salespeople. So the people that were getting a commission were the people that were deciding whether or not this was a risky sale to make. And from a positive side, good policies can be very powerful. They can be very effective. They are one of the key ways in which people at the top of an organization can communicate to their staff what they want to do, and also to understand how the business functions, what it does. And through these, it can look for opportunities to do things better, streamline the policies and processes, and then to communicate them to staff. And ideally, to repeat successful things in one country to another, or go through a franchising opportunity and start to franchise their business out. And often a key aspect of franchising a business is having effective policies and procedures that can be copied by other people. So let's look at some of the common problems there are with policies and procedures. And we can talk about it in two ways. One is how they get written in the first place, and then specific issues around the content that exists within policies and procedures. So let's look at first how they're written. And in the real world, what happens often is that they evolve over time. And that as the organization grows and develops, so do the policies and procedures. And a lot of situations where people start and join an organization, they're told how the business runs by the people that they work with. And there's a term, sitting next to Nelly, where you often learn the how to do your job or how the organization is structured by sitting next to an experienced person who explains things to you. But the downside of that is because they evolve over time, and because often they're transmitted verbally, is that they may not be recorded effectively. The downside of this is that if there is any problems, is often what's looked at, should it go to litigation, is what's recorded, what's written down. And it's often a consequence of how organizations grow. And there is a model called the capability maturity model, which explains the different stages of evolution that an organization will go through. And at the beginning, you have organizations that are really run and controlled by people. And it's sometimes described as people doing heroic deeds. They're the people that will work late, work all hours to get a release of a new product done. And as an organization develops, that can only happen so far because of the risk of somebody falling under a bus or being ill, that sort of thing. And so you want repeatable processes where you can slot different people in to do the task, and it's not stuck with a bottleneck of only one person being able to do that. So at the beginning, there isn't necessarily the need for policies and procedures. But as the organization develops and gets more formalized and larger, so that need starts to become greater. And another reason why there are issues with this is often the people that have the knowledge of how things are done or how things should be done aren't necessarily the best people to communicate it. The people setting the policy may not be good writers. And this is called sometimes the curse of knowledge. Often the best experts in a subject aren't necessarily the best teachers. And that's true with communicating policies and procedures as well. So why does this happen? Part of the reason for that is that it's often very hard to keep policies and procedures up to date. The tools that we use for writing them can make life quite tricky in actually keeping them living documents to make the change and get them published and transmitted out to staff. And often policy documents can get frozen in time. They sit on the bookshelf, rarely read, or they've been written a number of years ago. And in the meantime, the organization has changed its policies and evolved how it's gone through. And the tools that we use, if we use a more advanced tool for publishing them, sometimes only a few people know how to access those tools to write and edit those changes. So the policies and the environments in which we write the information can become black boxes that only a few people understand. So let's look at some of the issues specific to writing the policies themselves. And in the real world, often instructions are not stored in a single place. We get information by email of updates or variations or what to do in exceptions or special circumstances, information relating to an immediate problem. And so we end up with having to manage different informational guidance from different places. And often this content exists in emails, in old manuals, verbal information in that particular way. And in the real world, what often happens is, although management may set policies and procedures as to how things should be done, sometimes those policies and procedures don't work effectively on the shop floor. So what staff do is they have to adapt and change things to make them work in the best approach. And those adaptations and those changes may not be formally approved. They may not be communicated back to management as to actually this is how we do it in a real situation. And a one-size-fits-all policy or procedure may not work in every circumstance. There may be regional variations. For example, for the government body that merged six organizations together, they had a department or a sector based in Scotland, which comprised about 20 people. So the policy for ordering things, such as even ordering the milk or ordering paper, involved somebody walking down to the village shop and getting it that way. There was the policy of having a formal bidding process or doing things in that suited the large organization in England just wasn't appropriate to an organization that had only 20 people in Scotland. So the biggest challenge, one of the key differences with policies and procedures, is that there are different audiences looking at the information. each with different requirements. And this is probably the biggest failing with policy documents when they're written. Often what drives them is regulatory and compliance requirements. So one audience is the people that are regulating the organisation, and they want to see the policies and procedures from that view. You have the auditors that want to check that the internal auditors that want to check that the processes and checks and balances are in there. But you've also got management, you've also got people doing the task. And those that are doing the task are only interested in what do I need to do to complete the particular task that I need to do at this moment. So they're looking at it from a task-based approach rather than an overall process-based approach, top-down approach. And with this situation, what you can end up is with overlapping policy documents. When things go wrong, for example, with the situation, say, with the NHS and data being insecure, the immediate reaction is to say, we need to write a policy for this. And what you find is that a policy already existed. And in reality, what you need would have been better would have been to extend the policy itself rather than to write a new one. And what we have in situations, for example, within fire safety, is you have laws and regulations that overlap on each other. If you will have regulations and requirements from Fire Brigade in London, European standards, standards from central governments, British standards, codes for buildings. And if you're trying to make sure that your building is safe from a fire perspective and conforms to all the requirements, you have to check all of those different situations. We had a client, an NHS trust, that had IT security policies and procedures. And if you wanted to do something like send an email, send a file via an email, then effectively for the poor old user who would need to check that they conform to all of the policies and procedures, to really conform, they'd have to have eight different policy documents open, covering all the different aspects of maybe managing a memory stick, the email system, file security. They'd have to have eight different documents open on their desk. So as they did all the tasks of sending a file by email, checking the different policy documents to check that they conformed, in reality, that would be impossible to do. So people use common sense, or they get to learn from word of mouth, and then you get the risks that policies are not complied with in the correct way. Another problem with policies and procedures is often there's what you might describe as boxed thinking. People see a policy or a procedure as existing within a Word document, a self-contained file that doesn't overlap or relate to other policies, other procedures. And that these are often disseminated by tools such as SharePoint, which then people print out or they read on screen. And like in the Victorian days that we would have people segmented into different offices with doors and locked away and very discrete areas that people did one thing and nothing else, we have that same problem often with documents that are written, policy documents that are written. So let's look at some of the problems about writing the policies and procedures as well. When we're given policies, documents to improve and to update, one of the biggest problems that we see is that the content is not organized, content is not planned, it's evolved over time. And part of the key things that we're doing is moving information around so it follows a logical sequence, so it's in a logical place. Sometimes information belongs in a different document. Where there's overlap, it needs to be consolidated into a single, moved into that other document. And another key problem that we see is what you might describe as mixed topics, that there'll be information with a heading about how to do something or what should be done, and underneath that is lots of information about lots of different things. So it may be what to do in a certain situation, and also what to do if there's an exception or special circumstance. And so if somebody's looking, they may not spot what to do in that special circumstance. Or they may have to plow through lots of information that's not relevant to them to get to the situation that applies to them. And it can lead to the same information being written in two different places, because the person that's writing an update or extending the policy may not spot that this information already exists. And another problem we often see is the use of the passive voice. And this is a way of writing that's often used in scientific journals and academic environments, where you talk, as it were, from the observer's viewpoint. So, for example, this sign here is an example of a passive sentence. The playing of ball games against this fence is strictly prohibited. If you're not certain about whether something's written in the passive voice, there's a one way of checking. If you can add the phrase "by zombies" at the end of the sentence and it still makes sense, then there's a fair chance that your sentence is written in the passive voice. The problem with the passive voice is it can often be unclear who should be doing what, when. And we'll talk about a little bit later an alternative way of writing sentences so that it's clearer. So let's look at some of the things we can do to write policies and procedures in a better way. Often, you're not starting from a clean sheet. Often, you have policies and procedures that already exist, and you have to take those and work with them. So what we generally recommend is to do an audit of what you already have. And we can look at it from a number of ways. One is audit it from a viewpoint of common writing problems. And we can use a traffic light system of red, amber, and green. Red being things that are seriously wrong that we really need to fix straight off. Amber being things that probably we can fix at a second stage. Green, things that are being fine. So we can look through the document and the topics and judge it against certain criteria and just really mark them by this red, amber, and green. We'll talk a little bit about metadata later on, but if you can tag your information and label chunks of information in certain ways, then we can use this traffic light system for tagging the content. So we can tag a topic or a page as being red, amber, and green, and then just filter and just then tackle and address all the red ones and then all the amber ones. So from a writing perspective, we can look at things. Have sections been written in passive voice? Are the headings clear? Does what the heading say explain what's coming next? Is it clear from the heading what this piece of information is about? Are there sentences which are unclear, that just don't make sense? Are they too long? Are they wordy? Would it be better by splitting them into two sentences or three rather than one great big long one? Is there any jargon in there? Is it clear what the jargon means, or reference to where you can find information on what certain jargon or abbreviations and acronyms are located? If we look at things by benchmarking things from a structure perspective, again, we can use this traffic light system. Is the information organized coherently? Is there a natural flow from one step to the next? Do you have headings and sections where topics are mixed together, where it'd be better to break them into two or three separate things? Is it clear who should be doing what? Is it clear what you should do before you start? Is it clear what should happen next? And we'll talk a little bit about that later on as well. And then there's more fundamental, what you might call return on investment, benchmarking measures that you can use. And for each document, you can check, is it clear who this document is for? Is it clear what the purpose of this document is for? Is it clear what people should be doing as a consequence of reading this document? Is it clear how we measure whether this is successful or unsuccessful? And do we have a mechanism whereby it's clear how this document will be kept up to date? So when it comes to structuring, what we should have for each document is a strategy. As I said, each document, it should be clear who it's for, and this should be documented within the document itself. it should be clear what the scope is, what it covers and what it doesn't cover, so that we know that if there's other information we should be looking at creating or going to another manual. And it should be clear who has set these policies, who has set these rules. So if there is uncertainty, if somebody wants to suggest a different way of doing things, they know who to contact. They know who is responsible if the policy itself is incorrect. And in doing this, in writing these documents, what we should be doing is thinking outside of these closed boxes of Word documents published in that way. Because what we should be doing is being having the ability to meet the different requirements of different audiences or different situations, perhaps create different versions of the same thing or navigation routes into them. And in the same way that we've moved from this Victorian idea of having offices with doors and self-contained boxes where people work, we can do the same thing with documents. If we look at buildings today, we have situations where rooms can be multi-purpose. So if we look at that photograph there, at the moment it's a dining room. It may be that we also use it as a home office. And in the same way that rooms can have multiple purposes and used in different ways or different contexts, or we can move furniture to different situations in the same ways, if we think outside of a document level and in terms of topics, we can republish our information, provide different views to different audiences. And that means using a modular approach to the way in which we write. So we break things down like we would within a database into different components, so we can then reuse information in different places and publish to different media, to PDF, to Word, to the web, to ebooks, for example. And again, if we take it, often people talk about Lego as a way of an example of how things can be built up. But if we look at buildings as an example of how we can use things, here's an example where we have different modules of the supports that build up, that support the building, and they're applied in lots of different situations to support this building. We have tables and desks which can be moved around, reconfigured, joined together to meet certain requirements over time. That's the same thing that we can do if we break our documents down into chunks and then build them up into different views or different perspectives of what we want. So this is what you call topic-based writing. And you can do this with tools such as wikis, help authoring tools, a number of different online authoring environments, data tools as well, content management tools. You can, to an extent, also do it with Word as well, but you have to plan that a little bit further when you're using Word. And each topic can then create a hierarchy with a table of contents on the left for publishing. One of the really powerful things that you can do when writing policies and procedures is use metadata. And another way of metadata is sometimes described as labels. So this is information about a particular topic. And so you can label a piece of information by different criteria. We talked about labeling information by the benchmarks of red, amber, and green, whether it's up to date, whether it's accurate or not, whether we need to fix it. But we can also use metadata and labels to say for each topic or for each page who it's for, whether it's for a manager, whether it's for a particular region, if it's related to a particular standard that we're having to comply with. And then what we can do is we can have indexes or tables of contents or books or documents which are filtered by that particular metadata. So we can create a table of contents which is all of the information relevant to a particular job role, all of the information that's relevant to a particular standard that the organization has to comply with. It's a very powerful way of delivering and making policies and procedures more useful and powerful. In an ideal world, as people are doing the tasks, the information that guides them through that activity is embedded, is there when they're doing the task. So if they're using a finance system, the tasks are embedded in the finance system. An example of this is if we use a Dyson's hand dryer, instructions on how to use the hand dryer are actually attached to the hand dryer itself. In that same sort of way, if we can have that policy and procedure at the fingertips of people as they do the task, they don't have to stop, look at how they should be doing things and then move on. It's not always possible, but in an ideal world, that's the best way to go. So let's look at the writing aspect. Now, I talked about the problems of the active voice, the passive voice, and that it can be unclear with the passive voice what people should be doing. The alternative is something called the active voice. And the easiest way of understanding the active voice is to think about the game Cluedo. And within a sentence, it's like the characters within Cluedo. There's a verb, there's an object, there's a subject, and sometimes there's something called an indirect object. Now, the easiest way of thinking about those things in a sentence is think, is there a murderer? Is there a victim? Is there what happened to the victim in there? Is there perhaps the murder weapon? And the murderer, the victim, the weapon, these equate to the subject, object, and indirect object within a sentence. So think about when you're writing your sentences, are those equivalents in there? And also when writing, if you're talking about different circumstances or situations where somebody should be acting, writing if, and then the bit of what should happen, the situation, and then using the word then is one of the most powerful ways of making it clear. If this happens, then do this. But also making it clear who should be doing something. There are some aspects when writing sentences that often come up that make it unclear. One is headings, that it's unclear what this topic that's coming next is about. So your headings should be very clear and unambiguous. What you must do, very clear situation, what is coming next and what that topic is about. There is some difference between the USA and between the UK about what must and shall mean. So it's probably best to stick to the word must. Shall sometimes can suggest that there's a choice, that people have an option. If you're using terminology, make sure it's clear that everyone understands what the jargon and terminology is about. As I said, make it clear who should be doing what and resolve, avoid the passive voice if you can. You should avoid that if you can. One of the key reasons why people fail things like quality standards assessments, one of the biggest problems with policies and procedures is it's not clear what should be done before somebody completes a task, and it's not clear what happens next. So when you're writing your policies and procedures, always check that it's clear what the user should have done before they started, either link to the information that's related to that, and check that it's clear what happens next, that there's not a void, that it's somebody's completed their task but no one else knows what they should do along the stages. This is a key aspect of making policies and procedures effective. And also make it clear what is mandatory. What is it that people must do? And what is it that's really just best practice? What is recommended for people? And then there's issues around what are the considerations that people may have. We had a situation where somebody would have to go to tell a client, a member of the public, bad news, that they had to pay out money to the government. So there were situations about considering if the person's got a dangerous dog, what should you do to minimize, to maximize your safety if you have to give them bad news? Those things are not mandatory. They're probably recommended or considerations that people should be aware of before they do something. And if you have people writing policies and procedures, give them the skills to be able to write effectively. And if you are using Word, make them aware of all of the features that are available in Word. And a lot of people are not aware of all of the features that exist in Word. There is within Word something called the document map. And that gives you, if you've used headings and styles within within Word, tells you the structure, if you look at that, of how your document is written, the skeleton that's available. And one of the things that we do is we provide training on how to write policies and procedures, and we cover this sort of thing if people are using Word. Now, this presentation's in general terms, so I'm not going to go into great detail about authoring tools. There are a number of them that are out there. A lot of people need to use Word, and we do write documents and policies and procedures in Word. But often, there are better alternatives, particularly online tools, that can still generate PDFs, that can still generate Word documents. And really what really works well is if you can work in a collaborative way, if it's possible for somebody to make edits to the document quickly and easily, as to keep the document up to date, and to avoid this sort of black box that nobody can use and understand. And it's very useful if staff have the ability to ask questions, to comment, to provide feedback on the policies and procedures. So as the organization lives and is continuous in its way it works, so is the authoring of the tools. And some of these tools are incredibly cheap. There's some tools out there that cost, for a team of maybe 10 people writing the content, as little as, say, £20-30 a year. Very low cost. If you need help in doing any of this, then there are organizations such as ourselves that can support you in doing this. Part of what we do is we help people audit what they have already. We improve their documents. We write new content. We train their staff. We help them move to tools that mean they can update these things effectively. And sometimes with these online tools, what we'll do is we'll have an authoring environment where we are logging in to the system and we're writing content, and that this happens over time so that we can act as a resource that clients can turn on and off over time. So, to summarize, the main issues over policies and procedures, the biggest challenges that are out there, is that often there's more than one audience. And this is where policies and procedures often fail, because that means it can be very hard to structure the information, because people try and have a one-size-fits-all structure for the information. And the tools that are often used take information and view things in a single, encapsulated, boxed view of just one document, when in fact we need sort of variations in different versions. And the way in which people are taught English to write essays isn't necessarily the best for writing policies and procedures. Passive voice, being clear who should do what, short, succinct sentences, that's really the most effective way of doing things. Excuse me. So we'll now move on to questions, if you've got any. If you want to ask me questions after the event, then email me. There's my details there. So I shall now hit the refresh on the questions side, and if there are any questions, we'll deal with them. Nope, there doesn't seem to be any, so we will end the presentation there, and I will say thank you for listening in. And we look forward to speaking to you at the next event.